listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When elderly people are no longer able to make informed decisions about their lives, a court can put them in the care of a guardian who becomes responsible for every part of the ward's life, including the ward's assets. But it's not just relatives who can become guardians. It can be private. It can be a private business. And New Yorker staff writer Rachel Aviv reveals in her a piece that was recently published in The New Yorker, How the Elderly Lose Their Rights, that this has led to abuse where unrelated guardians suddenly seize control of an elderly person's life, cut them off from their family as they profit from their estate. And it all can be done quite legally. Rachel Aviv joins us now. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
And also with us is Terry Williams, who experienced the power that guardians have firsthand after her father died in 2002. And strangers took over his estate. Welcome to our show, Terry.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Rachel, what's the intent of the guardianship law? Or are there different guardianship laws all across the country?
The guardianship laws vary state by state, but it's a very old law that came from England. And the purpose is that people who are incompetent because of age or disability, that someone else can, they can sort of outsource their decisions to someone else who will choose how to spend their assets, what kind of medical care they should receive. So essentially their rights are given over to a third party.
Because they're seen as incompetent to take those responsibilities for themselves?
Right. And so often for good reason. I mean, they might be doing something self-destructive or they might be prone to abuse or exploitation.
And you have written about guardianship in Nevada. Is Nevada a unique situation?
I think what was going on in Clark County was unique because for nearly 30 years, the court seemed to exercise no oversight when guardians were petitioning to take control over a particular ward. The court was just rubber stamping their petitions.
Do the wards need to be diagnosed with a disorder or an illness?
They do, but it's very vague. When I was looking through the medical certificates that physicians had signed, so the ward needs to submit a certificate from a physician, and usually that certificate will say that the ward has some sort of often it's dementia. Sometimes they just say that the person's confused or agitated or even depressed. The requirement for medical evidence is extremely low.
Terry, what happened in your case?
In my case, my dad was injured in a nursing home, and he actually expired shortly thereafter. I have no doubt that had my dad survived, I would have faced guardianship in the traditional sense. But my dad passed, and so I discovered the main players in probate court. And that's a whole other leg of their operation, if you will. But through my research in probate court, I discovered the guardianship side of it. And these were living people that their lives, their estates, their decisions were being handed over like secretly, I mean, to where the people could actually blindside them with this supposedly legitimate court order. And so that was my introduction into it. And so you put the probate with the guardianship together and you've got an amazing system that's just raping people of every right that we think that we have.
Hadn't your father left all of his assets to you and make you his sole executor? Had he written
a
will?
Yes, he did.
So why would this even happen? We're talking about a dead person here. Most of the cases that are in Rachel's article are involve people who are alive.
Absolutely. Well, with the probate situation, they had gone in pretty much and filed a petition, an ex parte, and I'll explain that if you'd like, but you know, it's basically a secret petition, and in the one for my father's estate, they completely concealed me. they had referenced documents or attachments that weren't even in the petition, and they walked out with an order.
Can you explain ex parte?
Ex parte, yes. According to Black's Law Dictionary, 9th edition, page 657.
You know it by heart?
I do. It states, done or made at the instance and for the benefit of one party only and without notice to or argument by any person adversely interested. But in this context, it's basically a secret proceeding that yields a secret order that they have for some time, and nobody knows that they have it.
Rachel, what's the extent of the rights a guardian has over a ward? Do the wards retain any rights?
Not if it's a plenary guardianship, which it often is, which means that the guardian controls medical decisions, the guardian controls who the person will associate with, where they live, what happens to their assets. In most cases, the ward does not have a lawyer, so there's no one arguing for the rights of the ward.
Do the wards have to be notified before they're put under court order?
Well, what Terry is describing is this ex parte order that's used in Clark County. No, they're not notified. So this provides an exception to the rule that both parties have to be notified. And so people discover that they're wards of the court without knowing it.
And you mentioned they could be moved? They could just be relocated from place to place?
Because once the guardian...
Are they taken out of their homes?
Once the guardian has received that order from the court, it is legal for the guardian to then make all the decisions. So in the family that I wrote about in the article, they were... the guardian came to their home. She said she had a court order. She said that she was going to be removing them from their home. If they didn't comply, she would call the police. They were put into an assisted living facility. And this all happened within... a week of her getting a court order that they didn't know about.
No, you mentioned this is in Clark County. Is that where Las Vegas is?
Yes, yes.
Would there be similar situations elsewhere? How many people's lives are controlled by guardians across the nation?
Well, there are 1.5 million adults in America who have guardians.
With $273 billion in assets?
Right. But most of the guardians are family members, which isn't to say that they can't also exploit their family member.
But it's less likely, we hope.
Yeah, I think. The problem is one of oversight. So many guardians are doing a great job and a necessary job, but there are these pockets of corruption throughout the country because of that lack of oversight.
Now, in the case of Clark County, I would have thought that Terry would have been considered, if her father were still alive, she would have been considered a relative who would have been a guardian. How did she wind up being pushed out of this?
I mean, that's what's so disturbing about what's happening in Clark County, or what has happened over the past 25 years, is that relatives are often, in the court records, they would be dismissed with a variety of insults, saying that, you know, they were exploiting the person, or they were a drug addict, or they were a gambler, or some insult that wasn't supported by evidence. And so these people were sort of taken out of the picture without any hearing about the evidence supporting that insult.
And so then a professional guardian comes into the picture?
Right. Another occasion that this happens often is that two siblings will fight over who's going to take care of the parent. And the court says, this is enough of this fighting. We're going to have a professional assume control. And then the professional suddenly is charging the estate for, you know, every minute that he spends on the case.
And what requirements does someone have to become a professional?
It varies widely, but in Las Vegas, there's no educational requirement. You do need to have not committed a felony and have not gone bankrupt recently, and that's all.
In your case, Terry, it was a man called Jared Schaefer?
Oh, absolutely. The godfather. The godfather of this racket that nobody can even wrap their minds around. But yes, Schaefer has been doing this as a public official for the first 23 years, and then he cooked up some way to be able to work in his individual capacity at the same time as being a Clark County public official, and just what he's done is no different than April Parks. In fact, there's television footage where she hung a training certificate in her office, and it says that she was trained by the Clark County Public Guardian. This actually started in the county, and I believe it's still going on in the county offices.
We'll get to the April Parks story in just a moment. But what happened when Jared Schaefer took over your father's estate as co-administrator? Did he start charging you a lot of money?
Well, it was a secret order that I didn't even know about until the first hearing that was on February 28th of 2003. In the probate court, I noticed a man begging a probate judge to see his living mother, and that didn't make sense. His opponents were actually the same people that had caused this court hearing that I knew nothing about. And so when we were leaving, I had no clue as to what was going on, and I would imagine I feel just like many of the guardianship victims that get this knock on the door. You're blindsided. As we were leaving the court, this attorney that's supposed to be representing me says to me, you know, whatever it is they want, give it to them. What they're about to do to you is not going to be worth it. At that point, I went to the records room, pulled my file, found out that Schaefer had been appointed ex parte, was charging $200 an hour in fees, and that they had concealed every estate planning document my dad had in place, along with my being. Nobody even knew I existed, which was insane to me. So I just kept pulling files, and I pieced together this pattern. But in the probate documents, it often referenced the guardianship case, which were held off-site. When I studied those records, I understand and identified two components to the operation. Some of the cases start in probate court and then segue into guardianship court and vice versa.
In his case, he controlled more than 3,000 wards and estates throughout a 35-year career. Eventually, he was brought up on ethics charges in relation to Terry's father's case. Why did it take so long?
Well, I mean, the thing is that in the end, he was not sanctioned for the ethical violation. And what is mysterious to me is that he's been doing this for 30 years. And everyone I've talked to has wondered, like, what is the source of his sort of security within the governing parties of the state? Like, why is he so untouchable?
I'm speaking with Rachel Aviv, whose article, How the Elderly Lose Their Rights, is in The New Yorker, and Terry Williams, who's featured in the piece. Terry, what did the Las Vegas police say to you when you took his cases to them and accused Schaefer of racketeering operation?
They dismissed me every time I tried to go. One person advised me that Schaefer's next move was to go to the court and get yet another order to do something harmful to me. I couldn't believe that they wouldn't take a police report. Finally, and I think April of 2006, I wrote up my own report, listed the violations on it, and simply tried to present it. They still wouldn't take it. In fact, I asked the lady, could you please just write something on here? I just need to know or be able to show that I was here. And she sure did. She wrote, not a police matter.
When obviously it is a police matter.
I think had the Las Vegas police documented the number of people who were coming to them with complaints about guardians, it would have been really overwhelming. I mean, because so many people I talked to said that they too went to the police and the police turned them away.
A listener called in to ask if a guardian has to be a person or can it be a company or a corporation where the actual person from the company can be changed.
That's a good question. I have heard of various institutes becoming the guardian, but not in Clark County. I've not heard of that.
Let's talk about April Parks, another private guardian. She's a guardian of at least 400 wards over the past 12 years. What was her relationship with the Clark County Guardianship Commissioner, John Norheim?
I mean, they became what appeared to be friends. When I could watch the court hearings, and he was extremely friendly to her. At one hearing, he said, you know, he loved her. She's good-hearted, social work type. And he just seemed to no longer scrutinize anything that came before him. If she said that someone needed guardianship because they were, you know, depressed and had strange thoughts, and the physician didn't even check a box explaining what was wrong with the person, he would still approve it. He just seemed to approve whatever came before him.
And you've written about her dealings with an elderly couple named Rennie and Rudy North. What was her reasoning for saying that they were incompetent?
She said that so this was a couple in their mid-70s. They were living alone. Their daughter lived 10 miles away. And Rudy was still cooking, shopping. They were doing fine. She showed up at their house. She said that she had a court order, and the reason was that he was, the quote was, confused and agitated, and she was physically declining. So the idea was that he could no longer care for her. Therefore, both Rudy and Rennie needed to be removed and put in an assisted living facility, which they were.
And they were found incompetent. How much freedom did they have to leave the facility and see their families?
One thing I want to point out is, like, they felt so overwhelmed and vulnerable and confused that I don't even know if they understood what was going on. So had they been, you know, in their right mind, they might have consulted a lawyer. But instead, they're confronted by this person who tells them that she has an order from the court, and if they don't comply, she'll call the police. And so they do follow. And by the time they're put into an assisted living facility, it's very hard to undo what has already been done.
Now, they had a daughter, Julie Belsch. Mm-hmm. Why was she cut out of this whole thing? Did she even know what was going on?
She did not know. She showed up at their house the afternoon after they had been removed, and there was no sign of them, and their door was locked, and she was very confused, and she called local hospitals to see if they'd been in some sort of accident. And it wasn't until 4 days later that she saw a note on the door saying, you know, contact guardian April Parks.
And then Parks described her as a reported addict to the court.
Right.
And that was her justification?
There was no evidence that she was a reported addict. That was just, like, out of thin air.
So how much did Parks get paid for her services to the Norths?
I would have to look back at the records, but she was being paid something like 200, at least a couple hundred an hour. So if she came to visit them just to provide company, she would charge them for that time.
And then the Norths were also given medications that they probably didn't need?
Right. And that's, I mean, that is like another disturbing strand from this, that once people were entering institutional care, whether it was the guardian's fault or the institution's fault, they were being overprescribed antipsychotics that they didn't need, all sorts of psychiatric medications, and they were losing their abilities.
The Nevada Attorney General's office found that Parks had been going to law offices and hospitals to get them to agree to refer patients to her. Didn't she often tell doctors what to write in order for the patients to become her wards?
Yeah, sometimes she would give them a blank physician's certificate and say exactly what they needed to write so that the court would approve.
And Hunter College has done a study on this to find out why medical professionals would sign off on a guardianship petition?
Well, the study found that a quarter of petitions are brought by nursing homes, often as a means to collect on overpaid bills. But talking to lawyers, I did get the sense that doctors, and these are lawyers in Clark County, doctors, rather than sort of engage in the difficult process of communicating with, say, a 95-year-old who has some dementia, found it easier to have a third party to communicate with. And if the person was being belligerent or didn't want to take their medication or didn't want to pay, they didn't even have to deal with that person. They would just deal with this other guardian.
Terry, did you find in looking into other cases that your experiences with the police were typical? How often is elder abuse prosecuted?
In Clark County, it's simply not. They will not. In fact, on April Parks' orders, there's actually a segment that says April Parks has the full support of all local law enforcement. They actually show up with her at the knock of the door, and she has the ability to call them, summon them, rely on their services. And it's like, well, if that's the case, where are the victims supposed to go?
Now, the North's daughter went to the local newspaper for help. Mm-hmm. Did that cause a scandal?
She actually went to a newspaper for a magazine for retirement communities, and that magazine had become aware of this issue because the editor had seen people who were sort of removed from their home against their will. So she was alert to this issue, and she wrote about it. Then so there was local coverage, and eventually. The judge who had approved the guardianship did terminate that particular guardianship.
Terry, has the state legislature gotten involved in this? Are they going to change any of the laws regarding guardianship?
Well, they seem to be trying to make an effort, but to me, it's just too little, way too late. There are people still in the pipeline, and it's like nobody's really paying the kind of attention that this deserves. And quite frankly, there's an article right now, Las Vegas' SWAT team commander has been placed on paid administrative leave for allegedly exploiting a now deceased elderly couple. It just, what's going on reaches so deep and so high. We need federal law enforcement. Nobody can rely on anything that's operating in that jurisdiction, I'm sorry to say, but that's the truth.
Rachel, how are the Norths doing these days? Didn't they go into decline after they were put into some of the facilities that they were placed in?
The Rennie North gained 60 pounds in part because she stopped exercising. She was taking all these antipsychotic medications. She was in a state of severe deterioration. Once the guardianship was terminated, now she's living in a home office in her daughter's house. It's not ideal, but she has lost that weight and she is walking, which she wasn't doing before. So it's a striking demonstration of, you know, what institutional care can do to someone, the way that it limits their autonomy.
Well, if the police in certain jurisdictions won't pay any attention, what about judges? Are judges trying to help the people who are being put into these guardianships?
I think it does vary so widely, but I think one of the problems is these hearings are designed to be, I mean, a court system is designed to be adversarial. And in a guardianship hearing, there is usually only one side stating their argument. The arguments of the potential ward, who is already sort of vulnerable and not really understanding the legal situation.
And who don't have lawyers, you say.
Yeah, and they don't have a lawyer, whereas the guardian is represented by a very experienced lawyer who happens to be charging the ward for his time.
Rachel Aviv's article, How the Elderly Lose Their Rights, is in The New Yorker. And my great thanks to her and to Terry Williams, one of the people featured in the piece. It's been eye-opening.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.